You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, December 23rd, 2021, the last live show of the year.
Ho, ho, ho!
My name... Please, this is an anti-Christmas show. How dare you? My name is Emma Bigland, and for Sam Steeder, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Brandon Sutton and Matt Binder. Ever heard of them? They'll be joining us for the entire show. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has announced a freeze on student loan payments until May 1st, affecting 41 million borrowers. Now it's time to pressure him into canceling all student debt. The FDA has approved the first pill to fight COVID called Paxlovid. It's got a rhyme, right? And developed by Pfizer for high-risk patients 12 years and older. A clinical trial shows it's highly effective if taken after you feel sick, as soon as symptoms start, and Pfizer claims it is still effective against Omicron. And speaking of Omicron, South African scientists say that the variant cases may have peaked as case counts have been falling and are down by 20% since last week. This comes as initial research suggests that Omicron may be less severe in the resulting illness than previous variants. And the Supreme Court has said it will hold a special session at the start of January on two Biden vaccine and testing mandates, one for healthcare workers and one that requires shots and testing for employees at larger shots or testing, I should say, for employees at larger companies. The New York Times is reporting that FBI agents infiltrated the Black Lives Matter protests in Portland with, quote, extensive surveillance, which I'm just aghast by. Our patriotic G-men, how dare they? But they were totally taken off guard by January 6th. And lastly, the Biden administration tweaked sanctions imposed against the Taliban to leave wiggle room for aid groups to get money into Afghanistan, which is on the brink of severe drought, famine, and other crises. It's not enough, though. We need reparations for the Afghan people and the Iraqi people, for that matter. All this and more on today's program. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. It is, as I mentioned, the final live show of 2021. And here with me is...
Sam Steeder. Obviously.
We're a bit technologically, lazy, I might say. We could change the fact that you there on Zoom, it says Sam Steeder, but I don't know if we need to.
I don't think you should. Yeah. I think that, a lot of people have been calling for it, and it's gone.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So, as you can see, Brandon, fixed. Wow. Look at that.
A little bit of magic.
Silence once again.
I don't know, is Binder going to be joining us soon?
Yep, as soon as he gets in, I accidentally sent the link to the wrong place,
it's all good.
He has it, we'll see, he should be here in a few minutes.
All right, yeah. Well, it's a treat to have you on in the first hour of this program, which is supposed to be a bit more serious.
It is a treat to be on, it's also a treat to be here in person. I know a lot of people probably are just listening over, whatever their podcasting platform of choice is, but this is, one of the first times I've been in the Majority studio since the COVID pandemic started.
Mm.
My second time meeting Emma in person.
Last time you witnessed it on air. We have been, it's jarring, right? We were saying before the show, it's sensory overload because I've only seen a two-dimensional version of you.
Yeah, and now everyone gets to see, me in all my glory.
Right. Well, exactly. Binder's here, so let's bring him in. Let's bring him in. Oh. All right. Whoa. Look at that.
I don't know what's wrong with my camera, but I'm glad you're fixing it.
Shot, it looks a little bit... No, that's too far.
There we go.
And here's Matt.
Here's
Matt.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing? Oh, Brandon, it's so nice to see you here in the studio with us.
Yeah.
I am always in awe of that green screen. Is pretty good. That green screen is pretty good, Binder.
It is. It is. I'm quite proud of it. And all I did was take a photo of your very background back in, January of 2020, the last time I was there.
Oof, I know. We were just kind of reckoning with the fact that it's been this long and it seems to never be ending. Never end.
Does this happen to anyone else when you think, like, when you try to think, oh, what was I doing last year? You, like, sort of forget that, like, I automatically think back to, like, March 2020 as if that was the last, like, that as if that's still a year ago. Like, I feel like everything after that has been in some weird, like, time hold. I don't know. Just, yeah. It just feels weird.
I don't remember what I did last Christmas, for instance. Definitely not.
Oh, my God. Yeah, when you put it like that, it's been flattened.
Because I stayed here, I'm pretty sure, I think. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of it has to do with, you know, the first 9 or so months of the pandemic, we were all on the edge of our seats because we were kept under this kind of weird umbrella of 2 weeks from now, things are going to be back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time we got out of the summer and that just wasn't the case, we kind of entered into that, like, everyone is dying phase of the pandemic and we don't know what we're going to do. That happened towards the last, you know, fall and winter. And so it was kind of easy to fall out of, I don't know, step with time.
I thought about this the other day. What if you had told us that it would be December of 2021 in March of 2020 and we'd still be dealing with this? I mean, what would my reaction would have been? I don't know. I might have had a panic attack.
And there were people that were saying that, too.
There were, and I think that's important to highlight. There were people who were saying that, but they were kind of drowned out by other, you know, people arguing their own expertise who were saying that, well, yeah, science and doctors might say it's going to take 2 to 3 years to go back to normal, but your boss says you have to be back in the office by August 22nd. So at the end of the day, who's the real expert?
Right.
I feel like we would be committing some sort of heinous crime if we didn't discuss right here at this very moment that classic Elon Musk tweet where he said that we would have zero cases by April of 2020.
Oh, don't worry. We will be getting to Elon Musk later in the program. But I do want to start off with this story that came out of the New York Times earlier today on the FBI and their surveillance of the Black Lives Matter protests in Portland. So, I mean, media critique can be lowest common denominator sometimes of leftist discourse, but I do think that focusing somewhat on how the New York Times frames this and debunking it a bit is instructive and important for people to understand. So it should not be a shock to anybody that FBI agents were monitoring Black Lives Matter protests throughout the country. They've been doing that before the murder of George Floyd. They were involved in Black Lives Matter monitoring. That's been documented to this point. Yeah, Matt?
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, they've been an American Gestapo since basically the formation of it since Edgar Hoover. So, yeah, continue.
So, but this is good reporting by the New York Times. So, however, again, I'm going to they treat it as an aberration of what the FBI engages in when it's in fact incredibly consistent. The FBI set up extensive surveillance operations inside Portland's protest movement, according to documents obtained by the New York Times and current and former federal officials, with agents standing shoulder to shoulder with activists, tailing vandalism suspects, it's a great use of federal resources, to guide the local police toward arrests, and furtively videotaping inside one of the country's most active domestic protest movements. The breadth of the FBI involvement in Portland and other cities where federal teams were deployed at street protests became a point of concern for some within the Bureau and the Justice Department, who worried that it could undermine the First Amendment right to protest against the government, according to two officials familiar with the discussions, who clearly must be the source for this New York Times reporting. Some within the departments worried that the teams could be compared to FBI surveillance transgressions of decades past, such as COINTELPRO projects that sought to spy on and disrupt various activist groups in the 1950s and 1960s, according to the officials, one current and one former who spoke on conditions of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the debate. So that's what frustrates me here, too. There has been monitoring of Black Lives Matter before George Floyd's murder, as I mentioned. There was an FBI informant who basically coaxed Red Fonthalis into using one of his guns and for holding it, and because they had a romantic relationship, essentially. And then she was penalized for that. She went to jail because of that.
Anti-Iraq war movement. We know, like, massive surveillance. I mean, this is just
Muslim mosques, yeah. Muslim groups,
environmental groups,
peace activists, pro-Palestinian groups. This is the norm. I didn't mean to cut you off, Matt.
Oh no, I was just gonna say we had that whistleblower, and I was gonna look up his name. I keep forgetting it, but out of Minneapolis FBI, who's basically like, yeah, I was just driving around in FBI SUVs all the time, tailing like Muslim like CARE, right? Like those sort that group, like tailing them to see if they were up to like some terrorism and stuff like that, and then trying to entrap other folks. If you can get them on the line for some smaller offense, then you can get them to inform on their community. That happened widely in Minneapolis and many other communities, obviously New York and New Jersey.
Abolish ICE protests is another good example of where there was FBI activity. And then there's just one more paragraph, and then I want to ask you guys about what your thoughts are. There has been no evidence so far that the Bureau used similar surveillance teams on right-wing demonstrators during the January 6 riot at the U.S. Capitol, despite police potential threats of violence against the heart of the federal government. Though the FBI did have an informant in the crowd that day, whoa, geez, the Bureau has at times used secretive tactics to disrupt right-wing violence, such as efforts that led to charges against men accused of conspiring to kidnap Michigan's governor. And so, like, a lot of people I'm seeing this morning are comparing and talking about the hypocrisy of the fact that there was not enough resources deployed on January 6th. And, like, that's a fine point to make. But the point that I think should be at the forefront of this is that, no, infiltration of and disruption of left-wing movements has always been one of the primary objectives of the FBI, and this is just consistent with it, as opposed to, as I mentioned earlier, some sort of aberration.
Terry Albury is the name of the FBI whistleblower who people should look up that story.
Anyway,
it's always super fun for me. Whenever conservatives start talking about, you know, their current push is that the FBI completely manufactured January 6th again, which completely flies in the face of the information that we have, where even the FBI was like saying we were pretty much hands off, other than that person who was like in the crowd, just like, you know, surveying the situation. And then also when it comes to like, you know, deplatforming and cutting off like conservative online networks or channels or accounts or whatever, you're always like, oh yeah, you don't care about this leftist because it doesn't happen to you. Like, wait till it comes for you. And it's always like, no. See, it's the other way around. This stuff has been happening to leftists forever. And you were the ones who didn't care back when it was happening to the left. You didn't care when it was the FBI surveillancing, civil rights protests and anti-war movement protests. You didn't care about any of that stuff. And then it came almost, you know, very little came for you. But still, you guys can't even handle that little bit. And you're trying to pretend like you're the first ones affected by it. It's just not the case. But, you know, that's what we see now.
I think that's a dangerous logic, because it says, like, if you don't make the right wing the face of all the victims of this sort of stuff, then you have it coming, leftists. Mm-hmm. When we have it coming, right? It's coming and coming and coming forever since these organizations. These politics are who they exist to suppress.
Well, yeah, and I think that goes to Emma's point. This stuff is always happening, and it only sometimes re-enters the news. You know, it sometimes re-enters the news as a story like this that, you know, comes out maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years later, and is therefore able to be framed as, like, this is something the FBI did in the past, and now they are no longer doing it. But, you know, we have to be aware of the dangers of overreach, because ultimately the people who are most likely to be platformed by, like, mainstream or have their stories, you know, inflated as though they are the sort of indicative of the entire problem are right wingers. You know, they're the people who are going to end up in New York Times articles after they get, you know, unjustly deplatformed for, I don't know, having an anti-black podcast at their job or something, or like being a January 6th. We're going to hear story after story about all of the, you know, all of the, sentencing of the January 6th protesters, and it's going to be framed as, isn't this a little bit of overreach? Isn't this, you know, too harsh? Isn't this that or that? It's like, yeah, I agree that any sentence in America is a little too harsh, but we can't pretend like it's an anomaly. If anything, it's only anomalous in how far they were able to get and how little punishment they're actually getting, which doesn't mean we should advocate for more punishment or become like a, you know, this is like tit for tat thing. But it is to acknowledge that, like Matt said, we can't just allow it to be framed as this is not happening already. And every time like a right winger at New York Times gets or loses their job because they like, can't stop posting like neo-Nazi propaganda online, we go, what if this happens to a black person? It's just like,
stares in Mark Lamont Hill.
I remember when they were first starting to punch Nazis, you know, no matter how you feel about that. And I was like, I don't really care if they punch Nazis. And someone literally asked me, well, how would you feel if people hated you just because of like, you know, who you were? And I was like, this is how far like we've gotten. This is how far like the narrative online of like this is sort of, I think, mentality that the left, because it's cooler online than the far right generally, that we control everything. And so, like, people are just allowed to live in that narrative, and they just tell people, like, well, what if communists were the victims of the same kind of oppression like what? Rich people were in America? It's like, okay, well, I don't know what to tell you.
All right. Well, I mean, again, that's just, it shouldn't come to a shock to anybody that this was the kind of activity that we were seeing, but I think it's important that we highlighted it.
We all know the first line of that classic saying, first they came for the Trump supporters, and I did not speak out. That is the original line that we all forget.
First they came for the small business owners.
That's right.
And I said, pay your employees $15 an hour and also provide health insurance. And they said they can't because, you know, all seven of the Denny's they own in that Iowa county just don't make that much money.
And it's difficult to clean your pool if that's the case.
I
we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we will have more show for you.
Folks, if you're looking for the perfect last-minute holiday gift, check this out. One of our sponsors is Shaker and Spoon. It is a monthly cocktail subscription box that delivers the ingredients and recipes for amazing craft cocktails, and it's right to your door. Now, look, I am a cocktail skeptic because I don't like sweet things. And
me neither.
And I don't like those. But they sent us a thing. They sent a box, and I took the one for mezcal. Bradley took the one for what? Rye? Okay. So if you go right now to shakerandspoon.com/majority, they'll give you $20 off. This is what it does. Each monthly box comes with three different original cocktail recipes and enough ingredients for 12 cocktails, four from each recipe. So you get to mix and you play around, but and a lot of the ingredients they send is stuff that's hard to find on your own. There was stuff that I'd never even heard of, like this botanical sort of like spray that you did at the end.
I love mezcal, so that's very exciting for me.
This was really good, actually. And the sizes are small, so you can have a taste of something you haven't tried before instead of having to commit to a full bottle of something that you might end up only using once. It's good. This is the thing about it that I really like. It introduces you to flavor combinations and I guess ingredients like, you know, not just like, you know, like orange bitters or like this floral stuff that I had in the mezcal, and the recipe cards. Like I say, I don't like, sweet, cocktails. So you're able to sort of like measure how much you're going to put in. Literally last night I went over, and this is actually going to be big, I think, over the next couple of months, because I ain't going to a bar. Yeah, unless like we get another like night where it's like 55 degrees. I'm not going inside to a bar.
Right.
And so I think, you know, within your pod of people, going and having a cocktail night is going to be fun. But the thing for me that I like about it is that I learned about, like, I don't like the botanical spray.
Okay.
But I like the other stuff. Like I, and so I made it once with the spray. You just do it a couple of times. But I like the bitters and I like this, and it really actually made like a delicious cocktail. And then I was like, now I know if I go out and I see like this, this ingredient or that ingredient, I know like make it without that. It just adds a certain sophistication to it. So, Shaker Spoon is now giving Majority Report listeners $20 off your first box when you go to shakerandspoon.com/majority. Or you can just click the link in the description. That's shakerandspoon.com/majority for $20 off your first box of delicious cocktails. Check it out. And they have different ones. They have mezcal. They have rye. I think there are other things that you can use that are based on a different liquor. But those are my two favorite, I got to say. Check it out. shakerandspoon.com/majority.
We are back. We are back. Thank you, Sam, for that advertisement from the past. Donald Trump is like the being accidentally right today. That's kind of the theme of the show. We have some clips of him saying things that are just like a little bit too on track for comfort. But let's start here. So
he's in Merry Christmas mode. Remember, he brought back Christmas, mm-hmm. and he's feeling the holiday spirit, which means suddenly like the ghost of Christmas, whatever the good one is,
Christmas vax.
Yes, that one has come, and the ghost of Christmas vax has made Donald Trump right for the season.
Is he going off on like a shower pressure again? Because I always felt he was right about that one.
So.
I remember that, right?
Yeah. Toilets just don't flush the way they used to.
And the light bulb one.
And the washer and dryers don't dry as well.
Yeah. As if he doesn't get every item of his clothing dry cleaned.
And now I'm sitting there next to the dryer waiting for it, looking at my watch, being like, oh, my socks are almost done. Binder, you tipped one of the videos we haven't watched yet, which is the him and Huckabee saving Christmas, but we'll have to play that maybe after.
Oh, okay. Right. I enjoy that video so much. That I actually played
it's the best
it
video of the year.
two separate episodes of my own show. So like, I had to like do like a replay. Like I did it last Thursday with my guest Parker Malloy, and then this past Tuesday I was like, you know what? It was so good. We all got to watch it again. It's that great.
And then we're gonna do it again on the show.
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, it is the season.
It was legit the Left Reckoning cold open last night.
Well. So Donald Trump is trying to put his face back out there. And I mean, I think he's likely to run in 2024. At the very least, he wants people to speculate about whether he's going to run in 2024. But right now he's doing what kind of reminds me of like how he aggressively went after the Iraq War in the Republican primary leading up to 2016, where none of the other Republican politicians wanted to go there. Basically, but because it was a common sense thing and because he said it so aggressively and because the base loves him pretty much regardless and he can just say what's on his mind, they appreciate his off-the-cuff nature, like it's going to go over fine. He's going to face zero repercussions for touting the vaccine. So this is a clip of him with Candace Owens here. In keeping with his what was the Bill O'Reilly tour he was doing the other day where he talked about how he got the booster.
Take credit, okay? Take credit for the booster and other vaccines, yes. Which is code for give me credit. Don't let them take the credit away from me.
and he's continuing in that vein here because he wants to seize the credit for the vaccine back from Biden. And also, I mean, I think he's just like, these people are being so stupid. Like, I like the vax and is in favor of it. He triples down here with Candace Owens.
In terms of big pharma, which is a huge topic on the minds of mothers, especially you're seeing what's happening at these school board meetings. Where do you stand on these vaccine mandates? And obviously, I know that you are pro-vaccine. Obviously, you did everything you could to get this vaccine out. I know where you stand on the vaccine.
It was one of the greatest achievements. We did it in less than 9 months.
And to be able to do that. Yeah, but now it's taken a twist, right? It's gotten, now we went from this is a good thing and people should have this option to military men, you're going to have to resign because you're not getting this vaccine. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I stand on, forget about the mandates that people have to have their freedom. But at the same time, the vaccine is one of the greatest achievements of mankind. We would have had a 1917, remember the Spanish flu,
Okay, perhaps 100 million people.
All right, so just a reminder, and you can just keep this up, Bradley. It's just like one aside. He was talking about how this is no worse than the flu. I mean, it's the flu. No one's going to die. It's not that serious unless you're a fatty. Unless you're a fatty and unless you're an oldie and unless you're a poorie, you're not going to get be affected by COVID. And now it could have been worse than the Spanish flu. All right.
I mean, it's amazing when you look at history.
You don't want to go out like Stan. That's just the truth. You don't want to go out like Stan.
All right, continue.
Actually, it ended the First World War because the soldiers were so. A lot of people don't know that. The soldiers got so sick. It was a terrible thing. There was no vaccines. There was no anything. I came up with a vaccine, with three vaccines. Mm-hmm. All are very, very good. Came up with three of them in less than 9 months. It was supposed to take 5 to 12 years.
And yet more people have died under COVID this year, by the way, yeah, under Joe Biden, right, than under you. And more people took the vaccine this year. So people are questioning how.
Well, no, the vaccine worked, but yeah, some people aren't taking it. The ones that get very sick and go to the hospital are the ones that don't take the vaccine. But it's still their choice. And if you take the vaccine, you're protected. Look, the results of the vaccine are very good. And if you do get it, it's a very minor form. People aren't dying when they take the vaccine.
What about the masking of children? That's a big one for moms right now.
I think it's a terrible thing. I think it's a terrible thing.
That flies in the face of science. The kids have a virtual 0% chance of dying of COVID, and yet they're insisting on these vaccine mandates. I mean, I'm sorry, on these masking mandates.
She really wanted him to get off that point.
That is not the only reason, though. Like,
yeah,
like
you spread it to other people. Yeah, you spread it to other people.
Exactly. Like, there again, globally, some like 5 million children have the experience of being COVID orphans, like losing all guardians.
Domestically, in the United States, it's like 140,000.
Yeah, it's just insane.
But that's still virtually zero by our population. So it's not that, you know, technically it's less than 1%.
Right.
Thank you, Brett. I'll say
statistically, it's zero.
Statistically, 3 million Americans dying is only like less than 1% of Americans dying. So that's not that many.
All right. Wait, but I guess
also tell that statistic to someone who has lost a child from COVID, because there have been there's been a lot less, but there have been children who have died from COVID.
Or permanently, like, or at least long term complications from it.
Yeah.
Well, we don't platform those people.
Yeah.
We platform the people who are arguing kind of abstractly about whether you should go back to work and be exposed to illness, and therefore your kids have to go back to public school. And you know, the mothers or children who lose their parents are just like, well, they're externalities of that system.
Well, I mean, it's like that Trump would be the kind of guy that if your kid has a peanut allergy, it's like, and Candace Owens, like, God, they're being so annoying, not allowing peanuts in schools. Like, those kids are the weaklings, basically. If you have a pre-existing condition and you get COVID as a kid, kind of natural, you know, that's nature taking its course. But
it's also just
hashtag
true that
save the children.
It's also just true that Trump is not a fan of his fans. Like, Trump is just has never been a fan of his more rabid, even like right wing, you know, apart from Fox News and OANN and whatever thing he's going on at the kind of a traditional news channel. Like, he's never been a real big fan of all of that kind of like QAnon left and like far right, like demagogue. Like, he thinks they're, you know, low class.
Well, because everybody in his class status is vaccinated. Yeah, I mean, and they see no issue with it.
Like, he's a classic kind of like old school conservative who wants to be the representative of these people, but really just can't actually bring himself to pretend like he respects them in any real way.
Yeah.
Right. But he can't push them away either, though. He knows that. Like, anytime there's been a chance for him to like refute someone, he throws that chance away because he wants those QAnon people. He wants the anti-vaxxers. Like, look at all the little addendums he had to add. You know, the vaccine's great. You won't, you know, you almost for sure won't die if you take it, but it's your freedom. If you got freedom, you can't, if you don't want to take it, you shouldn't be forced to take it. Of course, don't get me wrong there. He's got to add something to throw those people a bone because he doesn't want to lose them. No matter how much he dislikes them or even hates some of them, he still wants them.
Yeah, making an issue a personal choice is a great way to like just give it a type of legitimacy and like traditional American like values, even though it's like incredibly acontextual. I think he's angling to get back on Twitter. I think this is like his way of being responsible enough to get back on mainstream channels. But, you know, I don't think it's going to work.
Funny thing is, Twitter's the one company. Well, maybe with a new CEO, who knows? But Twitter's the one company who has been out there who has stated, like, period, we are not bringing him back. Like, Facebook has the whole kicking it down the curb to the oversight board, and the oversight board forcing them to give it a time frame, and they give it like a 2-year time frame or something, and then they'll reassess the situation. Twitter's the only one who is like, nah, he's not coming back. But again, new CEO, who knows?
Just a note here. Candace Owens' first tweet about Big Pharma was in April of this year. So
can we say, is there anything left in that clip, Bradley?
I mean, look, they just talk about masking, but if you want to,
right. Yeah. Well, then there we go. Yeah.
Take credit, Candace. Take credit.
The only reason he doesn't like masks is because he didn't make them. Like, if he could, like, yeah. If he was like, I upped the production for the masks, they were my idea, then he would be like, no, Candace, the masks are great. All children should be wearing them. Your children's children should be wearing them. Masks for everyone, like that. But he has nothing to do with masks, so he doesn't care.
Let's just, like, notice how Candace really shot her shot trying to say that more people are vaccinated and more people are dying means that people that are vaccinated are dying. Like, she actually tried that with Trump, and in the moment, he said no.
No, yeah.
No.
For him, man.
I mean, the reason, if we need to...
He's not going to be bullied by her. Like, he knows he's the big dog in that situation. He's not going to, like, subscribe to her fact pattern. He's never done that with any media member. He dictates the terms.
Because, and also, that implies that the vaccine is what's killing people, or, like, exactly. It's not working, and that's his vaccine. At the end of the day, he at least takes responsibility for the, you know... For, like, the marvel of modern science that he's describing of creating a functional or three functional vaccines that, you know... work within basically 6 to 9 months and getting them off the ground. Everything else after that failed. But you know,
and that before part was that, great. Was
and before
great.
That,
yeah.
But the science was something good. You know, he frames like he did it himself, like he was in the lab with the scientists making the vaccine himself. But you know, you can't deny it was a marvel of modern science. Too bad it had to be done through like the veil of, you know, private capitalism and all that other stuff.
Well, that's the funny thing about that marvel of modern science is that mRNA technology has been kicking around for a while, yeah. But we only like activated it now in case of emergency. And in case of, you know, governments forcing these companies to save us.
Yeah, and speaking of, like, marvels of modern science, again, we don't have, like, independent understandings of what Cuba's vaccine actually, in terms of its efficacy, but they have vaccinated 83% of their population and 90% have one shot, at least. So, doesn't need to be capitalist in order to actually create something that's gonna make inoculate people and push public health forward, obviously.
Also, there's a number of reasons. I just want to put this out there because who knows who's watching this show, and I don't want anyone getting the wrong idea from what Candace Owens just said. But there are many reasons why there are more deaths under Biden than Trump that have nothing to do actually with either president, really. For number one, Trump got lucky and sort of avoided the winter months for the most part when it came to COVID. We didn't get hit. U.S. didn't get hit till like mid-March of 2020. Winter was pretty much over. And we know that the winter months are when COVID's at its worst. Biden, inaugurated into office January 20th. So, pretty much he has to deal with that plus this winter. And then on top of that, we have variants now. And then on top of that, for the early months of COVID, like March, April, May, we were like locked down and mostly not going out. Biden's presided over all the reopenings and everything. People getting vaccinated, so more people going out and doing things, you know, events happening again. So those unvaxxed people are mingling with those, with all the stuff that is reopened again, but they didn't get any of the protections that the vaccinated people do. So they're getting sicker. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why there are more deaths now, honestly.
It's because we're basically following what their prescribed policy choice would be. And it is dangerous when all that is glossed over and this is just collapsed as authoritarian power grab. So like immediately from the vaccine, if you think the vaccines are part of an authoritarian power grab, you're not criticizing Big Pharma, Candace Owens or Charlie Kirk or any other people who are doing that. What you're doing is basically defanging any efforts to try to force these companies to share IP and knowledge with other countries to allow them to build it. Because why would you want to help other countries know how to make these vaccines if they're just authoritarian power grabs and you can't trust them, right? And then there's the other thing where it's like, basically, like when I see the right talk about the authoritarian, I see they're really upset that we paid people to stay home, like Binder mentioned. And now that they're having
they're finding it tough to fill those jobs at the lower wages that they had, and that's authoritarianism to them.
Yeah.
I will say, at least Trump, I mean, we're all forgetting that in the latter half of the last quarter of last year, Trump was recovering from COVID himself, so he didn't really have a chance to, you know, be out there as much rabble-rousing, but also, like...
Just breathing weirdly on camera.
Oh, yeah. But also, I mean, you know, it's a good thing he has at least moved past, like, promoting, like, bleach or hydroxychloroquine or whatever other kinds of, like, prophylactic things that he was pushing in the beginning, so, like, sort of half-heartedly before there was a vaccine.
Right. Well, let's maybe just stay on the Trump train then, shall we?
I am actually surprised he hasn't gone out there and been like, my good friend Joe Rogan says Regeneron's great. Should be.
Yeah, I'm curious if there's ever going to be a crossover event in that area. I mean, I covered this on the show yesterday, but there are three monoclonal antibody treatments. Only one of them works for Omicron. And it's basically out of stock in all of New York, and it's likely to be, say if you're Joe Rogan, if you're somebody who's wealthy, you have access to Regeneron or to a monoclonal antibody treatment if you want. But hospitals are not giving it out right now because they're so overfilled.
They could just use ivermectin.
That too, right.
That's a joke, Google censors, YouTube censors.
Although, I mean, it's unclear what this new COVID pill is going to cost. The government is going to buy some portion of it, but it's certainly not, I don't think it's going to be free like the vaccine. And it's thus far probably only, I think, available to around 10 million Americans based on pre-existing conditions, including if you're 12 and up. So children are going to have access to it as well. But I'm curious about how they're going to price it because it's that they could gouge and. I don't see the Biden administration standing up to Pfizer in this area. But yeah, let's move on to this other Trump clip here, because this actually came out yesterday, Binder, and I considered playing it on the show, and I said, no, this is the kind of thing I saved specifically for you. Specifically for Matt. Donald Trump, again, theme of the show, being accidentally right, but not really for using the right logic to get to the place that we kind of all are at. He thinks crypto is BS. As his wife, because they spend so much time together, I'm sure it's just like the result of ideological debate and a robust and debate that's based on the foundation of respect. But she's getting into the NFT game. Trump doesn't seem to have the same opinion of the crypto NFT world that she probably has.
Come on, First Lady. Really,
what do you think about crypto? Because, you know, New York and Miami is really getting cryptocurrency into their financial system.
Well, I never loved it because I like to have the dollar. I think the currency should be the dollar. So I was never a big fan, but it's building up bigger and bigger and nobody's doing anything about it. And it's I know it so well. Look, I want a currency called the dollar. I don't want to have all these others, and that could be an explosion someday, like the likes of which we've never seen. It'll make the big tech explosion look like baby stuff. I think it's a very dangerous thing.
He's talking about the dot-com bubble of the 2000s, obviously, when the explosion. Yeah, I mean, first of all, Trump is correct about his dislike for crypto. I love to hear it. And as he said himself, I know this very well.
But not because of the dollar, right? I mean, that's what's so...
Of course.
Anyway, keep going.
I mean, how did that come up? Because it seems like they were discussing Melania's NFT project. What did he have to say about that specifically? Or they didn't really cover that.
I think, in light of Melania's NFT project, what do you think about crypto sort of thing?
That's funny because once again, Donald Trump's got to disagree with Melania on something. It doesn't seem like they have very much in common. I don't know how that relationship even lasts. But anyway, I mean...
We know how it lasts.
I mean, I know how it lasts on Melania's side of things, but, you know... I don't really get what his dislike for crypto is, though. It seems like it'd be the perfect grift for him. I mean, it sounds like it's just one of those things where Donald Trump just likes the old school. Like, he's a very, like, traditional, classic guy. And I don't mean in, like, a religious sense or even a conservative sense. He just likes, like, things how it was back when he was growing up. Like, he's nostalgic. So, you know, changing it. So that's really what it sounds like.
Look at how he decorates his like palace. He wants to be in Versailles. He wants, and I mean, he's like a cartoon character, rich person. He's like how
he's forever stuck in the '80s. It seems
right, exactly. Yeah.
He, you know, he's nostalgic for the scams of his day when he was pulling real estate scams in New York City and, you know, undercutting like development costs and all that other stuff. This is sort of new, like late 2000s internet scam stuff. That's just beyond his time. I mean, he's part of that generation of like older CEOs who are still having their like websites printed out for them at work, and they're still in charge of the company, and they're like in their 70s and 90s, and they've been in charge of the company for 40 years. And so I mean, those people aren't the ones who are interested in crypto or like in, or even really susceptible to like a lot of the buzzwords that float around crypto, because that's more aimed at like, you know, the millennial, late Gen X, like tech generation of like, one day you're going to be an internet billionaire just like Steve Jobs. And it's just like, you know, I think that he, you know, he knows it's a scam because he, you know, a scam artist can smell a good scam, but it's not a scam for him. You know, it's not a scam that he's interested in promoting.
His sites are higher. It's the interesting thing about Trump that he does all these like petty little grifts, right? But he's always had an eye on like global currency markets and stuff like that, like how we're doing. And that is like not the reason I care about it. Like, right. Like the, which is basically like anti-inflation hawks, like why they might also want the dollar just to be, but like I mean I think it's like when he's talking about the explosion, he's absolutely right, because no value is being created. You're not gonna be able to sell an electronic like cartoon monkey for millions of dollars in 15 years.
Yeah, and also like he has a very low class person's idea of what like class is, so he's not going to go, he goes out of his way to like, yeah, gild everything in gold and have you know, like classical looking paintings of himself. He's not going to like hang up a lazy lion NFT, much less know what that is, because it's like, this is ugly. This doesn't look like
his wealth is so much about his presentation of wealth. Like part of why he, like, how he built his identity is on being, I'm the rich guy with my name on the buildings and it's going to be in gold. Like, that's really what so much of his identity is tied to. So something that's more opaque, I guess, like a scam that's involves a kind of cartoon or whatever, that's not something he's that interested in.
Right. And, you know, he's sort of hung up on the idea that, I mean, they're called cryptocurrency, and you have, you know, a country like El Salvador actually adopting Bitcoin as an actual national currency. But he's hung up on that idea that like, oh, the Bitcoin or some other crypto is going to replace the dollar. But, you know, to me, that's not even like the more, worrisome critique right now. Like, obviously, maybe that could happen in the future if it continues to blow up. But, you know, right now, crypto is trying to, change how the internet works. I'm sure, you know, Trump doesn't really care about that so much. And, you know, do we really want everything to be monetized like that? We want everything to be commodified. Is everything we do online an asset? Is everything we do online, do we want it put on a blockchain, never to be removed, forever there, inscribed? Exactly. Like,
I want everything I do to be put on the blockchain for privacy. Thank you.
I mean, I think when you think about like the way we've been moving with the internet, especially social media for the past like 5 or 6 years, where like everything has become like a brand, or like or has the potential to become a brand. Like, you know, very few people comport themselves online now. I mean, not very few people, but the number of people rather who act online as though like every tweet or every post they make is an audition to be a famous comedian or an audition to be like a writer for New York Times kind of has changed the algorithm for a lot of these places, where it's like, yeah, people feel as though, you know, every account you have is just a extension of like a brand that you are constructing for yourself. And so the idea of like every post you make being commodifiable, like where no one can, you know, steal your tweet and put it on their meme Instagram account without like paying you or something, I think does appeal to a lot of people who feel as though they operate in that world. But like, really, you know, we know it's just going to end up either A, being a bubble and having like the rug pulled out from all the entire economy by like, you know, a traditional holder of wealth, like a big bank or whatever, when they all just sell out of the Bitcoin at once, or, you know, it's just not going to result in the level of, I don't know if you call it economic mobility that it's being promoted as for most people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because even, even people like all of a sudden out of the blue, Jack Dorsey, former CEO of Twitter, is out there speaking out against Web3, which is basically, and he says it too, which was surprising for me to see. And he's a big Bitcoin guy. So obviously he has his own reasons for being against it. But Web3 is basically the push that all these venture capitalists and big tech people are pushing as the next, you know, generation of the internet. You know, Web2 was the social web with all social media stuff, communication. Web3 to them is basically the what they call the decentralization of it all. But then you look at all these Web3 crypto companies that are pushing this whole Web3 thing, they're all backed by the big VC companies who obviously have something to gain from it. That doesn't sound very decentralized to me when they are holding all the various different tokens involved with each of these projects that they're backing, and they have a monetary gain from you basically buying into it. I mean, it's, you know, we don't, again, another issue where someone is speaking out against this stuff where it's not for the same reason, but you know what? In my opinion, this stuff is getting bigger. And I think, you know, if someone's going to speak out against certain aspects of it, I'll agree with them and let, you know, and spread that message. So maybe that their, you know, their fans and followers or supporters will be like, yeah, that is a bad idea too, because this is getting out of hand at this point now. It's going to be like ridiculous when they're trying to make it so like your wallet is inherent, your like crypto wallet is inherently tied to everything you do online. So like, you know how you go to a website and you could like log in via your Twitter account or your Facebook account, and like that's like obviously not good for a privacy perspective that like one company has all your logins or whatever. I mean, but on another scale, imagine it tied to something that is inherently financial. Like imagine your entire identity is connected and everything you do is logged as your crypto wallet. Like that's so much worse in my opinion. Everything will become commodified and monetizable. And it's just like, you know, if you don't have money and you just want to go online and just take part in something, like that might be a, like, obviously you got to pay for internet connection, but beyond that, like imagine everything you do, every site requires you to buy in for something or have some sort of asset. Like it's ridiculous.
I mean, that's like kind of the Bill Gatesification too of the internet. He, at his outset, like essentially what Microsoft did too, right? Was that all of like these free programs that people were using, and I'm not up on the tech, so like I might be bastardizing what it was, but the amateur
freeware?
The freeware. I mean, he basically eliminated that too. And so like all this like crypto and NFT stuff is doing, or maybe the NFT stuff more, is commodifying, as you say, every inch of the internet. So like even these new frontiers and even these new forms of expression that people are trying to create that are different spaces. No, don't worry. We're going to commodify X, Y, and Z until a new space is created from one commodity, and then what's going to happen? Like, I mean, there's no space that isn't,
like for me, here's the most like basic thing. If someone asks, like, isn't the crypto asked you, like, and they don't know anything about it, it's like so simple. It's like, and this will turn people off so fast, in my opinion. It's an issue that I think really describes all of crypto. Now imagine you send money over, you have to buy something and you have to use Bitcoin or whatever. Imagine you send that money and that's it. It's done. You sent it to the wrong person. Oh, well, so sad. Too bad. You send it to someone and they don't give you what you wanted and you want a refund. Oh, well, so sad. Too bad. Like, yeah, there's a lot of problems with banking and the financial institutions, and we want something better, right? Well, even those terrible institutions take care of you as one of their customers and provide you with refunds, provide you with protection if your money gets stolen. In right. Bitcoin and Ethereum, if we want this to be better, then they should even at least, at the very least, protect you in cases like that. You know how much money gets sent accidentally or to the wrong person? How many people get scammed every day, especially old people? Now, imagine if all that happened via crypto and there was no form of restitution for those people. No, don't worry. Just call your credit card company. They'll take care of it. 99.9% of the time, you're covered. Your money's back in your account the very same moment, and they deal with it on their end. There is not even that in crypto. You send something wrong, you make a single mistake, you type out someone's Bitcoin wallet and you make one digit wrong, like one digit in that string of characters wrong, and send it to the wrong person. That's it. Your money's gone. Whether it's $5, $1,000, $100,000, millions of bucks, gone. Yeah. I think that is the ultimate turnoff for most people in my mind.
I just want to, we have a comment. I won't say the name, but just says, listening to, I love it, Marbert, listening to these guys try to talk about science and technology is legitimately painful. This is not science and technology. Like, crypto is bullshit, and it, like, it's just a scam that for a speculative asset. But let me just say here, this is Brian Eno, ambient musician. Everyone knows who Brian Eno is. Why don't you dabble in NFTs yourself? This is in an interview with the Crypto Syllabus. Eno says, I've been approached several times to make an NFT, he says in quotes. So far, nothing has convinced me that there is anything worth making in that arena. Worth making for me implies bringing something into existence that adds value to the world, not just to a bank account. If I'd primarily wanted to make money, I would have had a different career as a different kind of person. I probably wouldn't have chosen to be an artist. NFTs seem to me just a way for artists to get a little piece of the action from global capitalism, our own cute little version of financialization. How sweet. Now artists can be low capitalist assholes as well. And that's the thing. Like, so I, when people like crypto folks say, don't you want artists to make money? Yeah, I want them to be able to make money without having to be crypto traders. What I want is the state to pay for a standard of living and provide that basically by taxing speculators like you folks. And that will pay for the artists to make all the art that they want. I don't want them to be able to make trillions of dollars off of a speculative coin that they flipped to somebody and then
also,
you know, make away with the actual dollars that they were always after in the first place.
Right. Go on.
The funny thing here about NFTs being good for artists is that was like the push for – that was like the NFT push for a while. Like, oh, it's finally struggling artists have a way to make a lot of money. And yes, there have been some artists who have made money they probably wouldn't have made previously. But as soon as that came out, we are now seeing, and I don't think a lot of people know about this now, there are already workarounds to cut the artists out of NFTs. Mm-hmm. There are now NFT aftermarkets popping up to cut out, because right now the major push for NFTs for artists is that they actually get a cut of the sales every time. So not even just the first time they sell it. Every time their artwork is sold on the blockchain after that, they get like a little like a kickback. So that's like, oh, wow. It's like, you know, you have, money coming in all the time for this one piece that you made that gets sold over and over again. But now there are aftermarkets that look to cut that out so they don't have to pay that amount to the original artist anymore. And then on top of that, there is now a whole black market where people are just going to the various different, art social networks. What's one of them? Like DeviantArt. They're stealing art from artists and putting it up on the NFT markets. As the artists themselves, artists don't even know their art is being uploaded and minted as NFTs. And then they're seeing no money. They contact the NFT markets that's being sold on saying, hey, someone stole that. That's my artwork. And they're not doing anything because they're getting so many cases of this happening that they're just like, we're hands off now. We don't give a shit. So artists are now having their art being stolen and being sold by people who had nothing to do with it and were making money off of their artwork on top of like everything else I just mentioned. So, I mean, you know, as soon as there's some sort of vague benefit of the crypto world, there's already some sort of crypto, you know, marketer or crypto entrepreneur looking to cut that out so they could be the one getting the money.
Also, I mean, I know, Emily, you want to say something
first. No, you go first, and then we'll wrap and head into the fun half.
No, I was just going to say also, like, the claim that, like, it's anti-science or anti-technology or doesn't understand science or technology if you criticize or don't like crypto or are uninterested in NFTs, you know, I would lump that in with the same kind of, like, but what about the artist thing? Is this, like, a shallow appeal to, like, a genre of thing that you're not supposed to, like, criticize because, like, well, if it's art, then it's, you know, something you can't criticize. So, like,
what about the children?
Yeah, but, like, what if, like, some person was burning trash and calling it art? Should we just like not criticize it because it's art? And it's like, in reality, it's not about it being technology or science or art. It's about people's ability to make money off of those things, because like no one is stopping people from making art. No one is stopping people from like doing science or technology. We're talking about the negative environmental impacts of those things and how oftentimes they're misattributed to being some kind of, like, I would say, teleological inevitable part of progress when it comes to science technology. Oh, this is just the way like the web is going, and so if you're not interested or think it's bad, you're just, you know, a dinosaur. And with the art thing, is just like, come on, a lot of these are just like monkey pictures. A lot of it is just like derivative things, because the idea is to like make money in an environment where things are already popular. It's like you're making commodities.
Yep.
Emma, I think we should stretch this a little bit. So if you want to make your point, go ahead.
No. I feel like it was already covered.
Okay, I got one more point. So I saw another comment. Bitcoin is the people's money forged in the 2008
crash. Where are you seeing this?
Where are you seeing this? Lemus, yeah.
Our YouTube chat.
Oh, someone watching our channel said that about Bitcoin? What's going on here?
Let's just address that for a moment. That's First funny. Of all, who controls Bitcoin? Like, I'm sorry, like, people do not control Bitcoin. It's all, in any crypto, right? This idea that the people who are invested in it should be the only people in control of the currency that you want to, like, take over society is dangerous and, in my opinion, like, almost like fascist. Like, the government should have control over money. The 2008 crash, the problem wasn't that we printed money. The problem was that we printed money and gave it to bankers. Mm-hmm. We should have given it to homeowners and folks that needed relief in other ways, right? Like, so it's good to print money. That's the secret thing about all this crypto stuff is it's basically new age gold bug, anti print money, anti inflation stuff. They have speculative assets and they want those.
Well, they say it's democratizing. Wall Street Journal came out with an article a few days ago where they calculated that the top 0.01% own 27% of crypto, and it's top heavy in another figure that I can't think of off the top of my head.
How could it ever be democratic when, in order to get the stuff, you need a capital investments like computers to mine it that are insanely
that's who controls Bitcoin, by the way. It's not even there is enormous inequality in Bitcoin, like you said. 0.01% of buyers control around 27% of the total supply, which amounts to around 5 million Bitcoins, which in turn comes out to about 232 billion USD. That's from the National Bureau of Economic Research study. And then on top of that, you have the miners who are actually the ones who are spending all the money and burning up all that energy consumption, and ruining the environment, to basically, solve these equations to create more Bitcoin. And they're the ones who basically have the say over the protocols that like judge what rules and regulations happen to Bitcoin. Like, there is a 21 million Bitcoin finite supply. Once that's all mined up, that's it. Unless, of course, all the miners get together and vote to decide to, now we'll create some more Bitcoin.
Yeah, and they have that position of authority over your utopia currency because they wasted energy for nothing but speculation. So go fuck yourselves.
Right. I mean, it's sad to me because it is mostly people who just are like, you hear it and it's always like, oh, my family was hurt. But other than obviously the rich VCs, I'm talking about the dupes who are believing this stuff. I'm assuming the type of people who would be in our chat.
The same mentality from the people who get suckered into MLMs.
Yep.
That's what I
tweeted the other day. I said it was like LuLaRoe for dude bros. What this is.
It's like a deep fear of missing out amongst the population. Yeah. Instead of like moms who are like single moms, it's just like people who have a certain level of tech literacy as a result of being like, you know, either raised in a technological world or having like a vaguely tech related job, like deciding that this is their path to, you know, becoming rich in a world that they've been largely probably, you know, boxed out of traditional methods, like, you know, IT people or like people who like fix their grandmother's computer when she downloads viruses or something. You know, like this is their MLM. This is their version of that because it appeals to those same kinds of like, well, you're just a little smarter than the rest of the people who can't get this.
Yep.
Right. I would love to replace the financial institutions and the big banks. I'd love to see them crumble. I'd love it. But the point is, we would replace that world with something better. Like, the thing to me is, like, they always talk about like the unbanked, like, you know, crypto will finally, you don't need to open up a bank account with crypto and have minimums and this and that. And, you know, the big banks will take advantage of you with loans, while there are crypto things doing all this, taking advantage of people, like DeFi, tons of stuff that are taking advantage of people. But, you know, why not become an advocate for like postal banking or something that would actually help people and actually give people it's that simple. Like, and if you want to like eliminate the entire banking system and financial world, let's talk about what would make it better, like a better replacement, a better world. Like, crypto is an alternative, but that doesn't mean it's better. In fact, in many ways, it's worse.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be a Majority Report show, and it's very fitting that this is the final show of the day without postal banking coming up. I mean, that was a wonderful cherry on top there, Matt.
I mean, that really is, because that is what the type of policy that would help, say, for people, unbanked people in El Salvador, even, right? Like, create a postal system that banks people like that, but tying it to the speculation, of course.
That would actually be, and then it would undercut loan sharks and, you know, predatory lending and all that kind of stuff.
I don't feel very strongly about crypto. I don't feel like, you know, angry about its existence. It just feels very much like the kind of thing that people would come to your door knocking about 10 years ago if it were a different kind of product. And you'd have to, like, politely be like, no.
Yeah.
Because it's not steak knives. But in, you know, in reality...
At least you could use steak knives.
Yeah, it feels like a scam for people who know that capitalism is a scam and know that generally, like, work is a scam and all the things that we talk about generally from, like, a leftist perspective are scams. But they want to, like, be part of that scam, and they think this is just a new frontier of capitalism scams.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's not really a place that I want to go so much as a place where, like, oh, no, I don't care about decentralizing the, like, the web wealth system or whatever the hell they're talking about, because I don't think that's going to lead to, like, the kind of equality they say it is. It's because mostly it's just about, like, individuals in that world getting rich who are not traditionally rich individuals, you know, in their mind, which doesn't, like, even if we concede that it'll make someone who, like, 10 people, 10% of people who engage in crypto, like, even the highest number imaginable, richer than they were before, that's still not, like, the purpose of leftism, generally, in my opinion.
To have
another new type of billionaire out there.
To make a whole bunch of money for having done no work.
Boom. And with that said, somebody asked if we could get this NFT discussion clipped. I'm sure we will. To show people. If they are thinking about getting involved in the crypto scam, I mean,
and look, like, if you have money, don't put any more money than you would take to a casino. Like, I think you can make gains in speculation. I just don't think that's what we should point society towards.
If you want to bet on the Jacksonville Jaguars, bet on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm not going to stop you. Just don't bet all your money on it. With that said, we are going to head into the fun half now. 646-257-3920. Binder, I can handle the phones here, so it'll be easier because our connection's probably a little bit, you know, more stable or whatever. So,
sure.
We will do the phones, and we'll be taking your calls. We'll be reading your IMs. We'll be doing more clips. More clips. And they'll
do
be sticking around.
Final plugs?
Oh, yes. And, of course, Left Reckoning happened last night.
The final Left Reckoning. Yeah, just go check that out, folks. We did the Bumster of the Year, which was a Pramila Jayapal. Just, you know, making sure we learn the right lessons from what approaches and theories of change work. And when they are tested, you know, making sure that we notice the results of that test. And in my opinion, it looks like the junior partners in democracy, where the progressives and Joe Biden are partners, like, that failed as far as I'm concerned. So yeah. I think it's important to note that. So patreon.com/leftreckoning. We'll probably do some impromptu streams next week too.
And that doomed. What's happening over there?
Yeah. So I did the show for this week on Tuesday. We had a lot of great clips, including one we'll get to at the end of in the fun half of this show, that fantastic Trump Christmas segment. But youtube.com/MattBinder, twitch.tv/MattBinder. You could find the show from Tuesday on there. Also for the audio version, doomedcast.com. Also, being that we just had this whole crypto discussion, I have a crypto show, an entire show, new show separate from Doomed, coming out in the new year. Stay tuned. All the information on that will be coming out in the upcoming week or two, actually. We're getting close. It's going to be great. I think you'll all enjoy it a lot. Stay tuned for that. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Binder, and that's how you can keep updated on it.
Very exciting. Discourse.
I don't have anything new in the discourse to promote because all of my co-hosts are on vacation, but you can still check out episodes on the Patreon or SoundCloud, and, you know, we'll probably put up some old archive footage that's been taken down due to the many copyright and violations that exist in them. But yeah.
I noticed you're dressed very festive today. You have a red shirt underneath a green. Oh, wow. And then underneath a green. Look at that.
Yeah.
Was that purposeful?
Well, no. I was going to wear a red shirt, but it's a little too tight. It actually has words on it that you can't see. It says Dragon Sound, which is the band from Miami Connection.
Oh.
Well, one of the greatest movies ever made. You are. The Taekwondo rock band.
Man. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Oh, no. Are you ready?
Oh, no. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you could imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Snowflake says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
Oh no, Sam Cedar, what a fucking nightmare. What a fucking
nightmare. Bring back the DJ Danners.
Yeah, or a couple of them, just put them in rotation.
DJ Danners.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough for the break.
That's fucking nonsense.
You see, white people doing drugs, they look worse than normal white people, and all white people look disgusting.
And the alpha males,
psych, fuck them, fuck them.
Snowflake says what?
What?
Snowflake says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank. Okay. I'm making stupid money. Hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
Matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are black, 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 black. And the Africans are back, 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 back.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are black, black. Africans are back, back.
Come on. Blast. Come on. Blast. Come on. Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.